Also, right here.
Victoria Harding, SNHD and SEIU. And I just wanted to say, I always come to this meeting. It gives me a good indication of what's going on at the Health District. And learning about finances, I always learn something new because this is totally out of my area. It's so much bigger finances than anything anybody can ever imagine. And I just wanted to say, I have tons of respect for Dr. Iser in this respect financially. And our financial team with what they have done with the Health District. Just oodles of respect out there to you guys for that. And, you know, I read it as kind of that business person looking at it from a business perspective. And then I kind of look at it from an employee perspective. And I kind of see some things. And there was one thing that stood out to me, and that was when they actually put the FTEs over the different years and how much that has so significantly gone down. And I do wish, because we are so strapped and tired and exhausted, that at some point we do go up to staffing levels if we can get the money to do that, where we would be able to just not be so burnt out and be able to achieve our missions better and more efficiently and stuff. So that would be my suggestion, if we could do that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we can move to item three, and I know that we've been noticed and all of that, so, and we do have a quorum. So the next item is the adoption of the November 30th, 2017 agenda.
Move to adopt.
Second.
Hold on for the ride.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. So the next item is the nomination of the chair of the Finance Committee, and I'd be happy to turn this over to whoever you choose to turn it over to.
Scott, go ahead, take your turn.
Well, we need a first.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, any comments, any further discussion? Call for a vote.
You won't be my friend next week.
I thought that's what happened when you missed a meeting, not when you actually made a meeting.
So you've got do you have an agenda? Okay. The next item is the Finance Committee meeting minutes.
Yes, the next item on the agenda is the consideration of the Finance Committee meetings minutes. Does anybody have any comments, questions, or changes to those minutes?
I need a motion to approve.
Second.
Is there any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Those are approved. Next is the review, discussion, potential acceptance of the comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year ended June 30, 2017.
And I'll turn it over to Sharon to introduce our guests and to go on to the next item.
Okay, thank you.
This item.
Sharon McCoy Huber, Financial Services Manager. This next item is to review our audit, and the company of I. Bailey is the firm that did the audit this fiscal year 17, as well as the year before. So this is their second year with us. And so what I'll do is go ahead and turn it over to Tammy and Richard at this time, and they can introduce themselves and then go into which block.
Okay, thank you. I am Tammy Miramontes, and I serve as the engagement partner for the Southern Nevada Health District audit. And Richard Walker served as the manager. He was here in the trenches on a daily basis, working through the audit and making sure it got done.
And just before you continue, we're sure that this is picking up in this room. I think it has in the past. I just want to make sure that it's recorded properly.
Yes, it's on.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt you.
Okay, not a problem. Anything else you want to say? Introductions? Or?
I think that covered it.
Yes. Okay, so the purpose for you guys today is we will go through the report, and then if you approve it, then we will finalize it. So it is still in draft form until you give us the okay to finalize it, and then once that is done, we will go through the final steps and then move it forward to the board. So our report, this is the comprehensive annual financial report. So there are components of it that are unaudited, that are management's only, but the reports that we would like to discuss, the first report begins on page 10, page 10 of our report.
Number of page 10, I think it would be 14.
Is this page?
Yes, the independent auditor's report.
Okay, just so we're all on the same page. Yeah.
So.
This is going to be different. It shouldn't be, because it might be. Just one second, let me try right. There may be something.
That copy may not have.
I reviewed it last online, and so I know what you're talking about.
You may not have a full copy. This is the one I got today. We'll get you another copy. Mr. Chair.
Are you having the same issue?
Yeah. Let me share.
Okay.
So I'll share this with you until Jackie gets you yours. Tammy, please go.
Okay, so the first group, so we actually issued three separate reports associated with the audit. The first report we issue is the independent auditor's report, and this covers the basic financial statements themselves.
I am sorry, I thought it was a 2:30 meeting.
Scott, sorry.
Bob Coffin's here.
You were going to make me chair.
Exactly. And I became chair because you were like.
Making a scene. Thank goodness.
So this report goes over our responsibility, your responsibility. It really covers the financial statements themselves, as well as the schedule of expenditures of federal awards, which is the statement that covers all the federal money. And the whole intent of this report is to give an opinion on the material correctness of the financial statements themselves, as well as the schedule of expenditures of federal awards. And we have given an unmodified opinion on the financial statements, so we believe that they're materially correct as they are presented here, and that the users of the financial statements can rely on these numbers. So that's that first report.
May I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
So these include the new standards that the federal government has put in place, all of that. You keep us up to date on all of that, right, when you go through the books?
We do. Yes, we do. Nothing that isn't effective as of 6/30/17, but anything that was effective as of 6/30/17.
Okay.
So that's the first report. Then the other two reports are towards the very back of the document. Mine is the numbered page is 87. I don't know what the PDF page.
I think it ends up being the same.
Which page did you reference?
87.
Let's try that.
They're not paginated.
Yeah, there's something happened to your copy. So some of them didn't get copied correctly.
But I brought the right one. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay. So this second report. This report is in accordance with government auditing standards, and the goal of this report is to discuss any material non-compliance with laws and regulations, as well as internal controls over financial reporting of the entity itself. And so in here, as you read through the report, you will see that we have identified two items, 2017A and 2017B, which we determined to be material weaknesses, in internal controls, which means that the financial statements, in our opinion, could be materially impacted if those controls are not corrected and, corrected. And we will go over those in a moment. And then as far as so that's the internal controls. The second piece of it is compliance with laws and regulations. And we did identify one item, which we have identified as 2017B, which is also included in the set schedule of findings and question costs. And we have determined that that is material noncompliance with laws and regulations that we'll go over. I can jump to the third report if possible, or would you like me to go through those two findings and then we can go through everything else?
Go to the third report and we can go there.
That's that report. Then the last report covers, it's in accordance with uniform guidance, and this is really only targeted towards the federal program. So the federal money that you spend, we determine each year certain programs that we identify as major, and we audit those programs, and then we issue an opinion on compliance with those programs, And we also issue our report with any internal control deficiency that we identified. And so we have actually identified one item in here that, with the family planning services, that we believe is a material non-compliance with family planning services. So our opinion is qualified as to that component of family planning services. And then, but everything else was fine. And then as far as the internal controls over compliance, because we did have material non-compliance, we obviously have also identified that as a material weakness in internal controls. So in total, there are three findings that we'd like to address with you. I can stop there if anybody has any questions, or if you'd like me to just jump right into the findings, we can do that.
May I? Who's chair? Are you chair?
Yes.
Yes. Just because I missed the first 15 minutes, and I really apologize. Did you make any statement to the effect in the beginning that your opinion was qualified in any way? I don't see qualification.
The financial statement opinion, or the financial statements themselves, is unmodified.
Correct. But your opinion is they represent fairly all of the...
For the financial statements.
Okay.
We do have a qualification for the family planning services.
Okay. And you did not examine or make a statement on the internal controls, did you?
We examined internal controls. That was that yellow, that was that second report that I was referencing that talks about internal controls. So we did identify two material weaknesses.
But you plan to go over those individually, correct?
We will.
Okay, all right. Important thing was the overall, to me, opinion. Thank you.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
So can you define for us deficiency versus material weakness? Because those words do mean a lot when you're talking about grants and different things. So in your opinion, can you kind of give me some backup?
Yeah, and so there's actually some, we try to define it in the report itself as far as a deficiency in internal control versus a material weakness versus a significant deficiency. So material weakness is by far the worst, which means that we believe that controls are not sufficiently in place, that a material weakness could occur and not be detected in a timely manner by management. So there is a potential. Significant deficiency is somewhere less significant than that, but we still think it's important enough that you guys should know about it because there is a potential risk there. And then a control deficiency is something that, you know, there's something you could work on, but we really don't think it'll rise to a level that it would be material at some point. Just, you know, some things to work on.
So then, with that being said, so then our staff have the ability to reach out throughout the year to ask if these are the ways that things are being reported are correct, or how does that work?
Do they have the ability to reach out to us? Yep, absolutely. Anytime, if they have any questions about what we found, or even just control issues, or as new standards are being implemented, or new programs, you know, we're open to that communication.
I only ask because Bob and I were on Southern Nevada Water Authority, and it was very contentious on some weaknesses that were found, so that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, well, we count on our outside auditors, but there's language things, you know, and material versus not so bad kind of things. I forget all the subcategories, but material is a killer. But I think it's some sort of a strong signal about internal controls.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying deficient, but saying could be better. You've been very polite.
I always try to be polite.
Anticipating potentials.
We pay her to be nice to us.
But I mean, yeah, internal controls are really, in our opinion, as an accounting profession, if you don't have internal controls, then you know.
Your work's no good.
Yeah, nothing. Anything can happen at that point. So that's why we always focus on internal controls as far as identifying issues.
Member DeMay. Do you have a question?
I don't recall us having these issues last year's report. Am I correct in that?
Nope. Last year we had
none last year.
Okay, so I guess begs question, what happened?
Well, could it be, maybe we can do one of these at a time and then
fine.
Be able to try to explain them. Is that all right with you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So then if we want to jump into the three findings that we identified, they're beginning on page 100 of my...
Ninety-nine, I think, on mine as well.
I don't know if you've had a chance to preview these, look at them. So this first issue, we identified as a material weakness in financial close and reporting. And what we had noted as we were going through the audit is that there were certain important close procedures that were not being performed timely. One example were the bank statements that I think they were 9 months behind in the bank reconciliations.
I think.
It was October 4th, yes.
Yeah.
So the bank reconciliation, which we believe is a very important procedure to be performed, they hadn't performed any of those since October of the previous year. And then there were some medical accounts receivable issues where there were some reconciliation issues identified with those as well.
Yeah, they were identified when we arrived for the audit, but there wasn't a resolution available until after we began field work. And a few other just general delays in preparedness for the audit.
And so again, everything, by the time the audit was done, everything was corrected, all the adjustments were posted, all the reconciliations were done. However, you know, something material could have been occurring during the year and would not have been timely identified. And so we identified that as something that needs to be resolved and corrected. We felt the cause was staffing shortages and, reassignment of responsibilities. But I think really it's up to management to determine how to correct it.
Excuse me, Tammy. Doug, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Question.
when was the last time the bank accounts were reconciled? You said
it was October.
It was from October 2016 through the end of the year. They had
through June of 17, to be specific.
Correct. Yes, correct.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we arrived for field work September. I can't remember the first day. It was the second week of September.
How does that happen?
That's really disturbing to me.
My husband would kill me if that happened.
I'd lose my job at work if I didn't do it every month.
So, it's a very long story, but to make it short, first off, we had a death of an employee, and at the same time, a week after he died, the accounting supervisor left, and that's... So I was then, and I was already short one staff member. And so that now made me short three staff members. And then when I started digging to try and find out where we were and what was going on, that's when I discovered that things hadn't been done. And the person that was responsible for the bank reconciliations is the person that died. That person's backup was the accounting supervisor, is the person that left. And so, through the hiring process, so that happened in October, and Janet was promoted in January, so I had a 3-month lag. We did attempt the bank reconciliations more than once. We would spend evenings up here trying to work. Also during that time period, we were in the process of training and going live with our new ERP system. So a lot of daytime hours were on training and learning the new system, so nighttime hours were trying to pick up the lag. And the goal was to make sure that the vendors were paid and employees were paid and those types of things, the day-to-day operations were happening. And so, you know, all of the grants were filed timely, those types of things. And so the things that were falling behind were the closeouts, which included the bank reconciliations. Receivable entries were done monthly for EH, as well as medical billing. The medical billing wasn't balanced, but yet all the entries were done monthly. The bank reconciliations, We just, every time we'd get a chance at nighttime, we'd go in and try and hit it the best we could. We started a new bank in July also during this. And so changing banks, there was a challenge there because the credit cards were different through Wells than they did through Bank of America. And so when we were balancing the accounts, because now we have two checking accounts, the disbursement account we had balanced every month, so that one was fine. It was the depository account which wasn't, we weren't being able to balance. And it's because the credit card receipts, we couldn't get them to match. And so we were having to go back individually by item, and with the mass amount of credit card information that comes in, it was taking a lot of time.
What is a large amount of credit card data? On a daily basis, I mean, are we talking 20, 50, 100 transactions?
Well, it depends on the month. Like the month of January would have been a lot because we do a billing in January. And so you're talking probably anywhere 20 to 100 transactions during the slower months, which would have been like December. What would you have said? Yeah, I've never looked at it as.
I would say our biggest problem though was timing issues between what posted from online credit card payments into our system did not match what posted to the bank, because we found that later when we finally pulled the bank in and said we can't do this, that they told us their cutoff was at 5 o'clock for checks and 9 o'clock for credit cards, and IT was cutting it off at midnight. So all of those was coming as one day's business, and they weren't balancing to the bank. That was our biggest problem. Most of the other stuff we've balanced.
I can see that, but I know Wells Fargo will do midnight to midnight. The reason I do that is we do 150 credit cards a day where I work, and we are on Wells Fargo, and we balance every day.
Right.
And it comes in a day late. That's They hold your money for a day.
Right, and ours comes in to get our money earlier, they cut it off at times. And
but if you
and we found that out
after. You can actually make sense of it all.
Right, yeah. But until after we brought the bank in and we sat down, because we were having them help us because we couldn't reconcile. And it was like, okay, we've got to get this balance because we've got to figure out what's going on. And those were the challenges. And then we finally figured out a system. So we had two staff members checking off based on, they draw a line, here's the cutoff, this is what needs to clear versus this what here. And that's how we ended up reconciling through June. Now since then, we've had IT change the system where our times match, and so when we run a post, they match the totals. And if the totals don't match, then we have an error either on the our side or the bank side. So we can go in, find it, correct that error, and move forward. But.
So may I ask, maybe on your behalf, this error has been corrected and will not reoccur?
Correct.
And I don't know if you have been able, Tammy, to assure of that, because you didn't look at anything. But this reconciliation has been fixed, is what you're saying now.
Yes, we close out every month and we reconcile every month, yes.
Member Coffin.
Thank you. Did you have to make a journal entry to make this correction? And if so, how big is it? There must have been an adjustment.
It was
$26,000.
When we balanced cash at the very end.
And I'm looking at that. I'm a little bit surprised. This is my first go around on this financial statement. The auditor's report doesn't send any signals of these sorts of potential deficiencies. It's in the notes. There's no mention
of that.
Okay, what is this versus everything else?
So that's what you missed. That was that report.
I'm looking at pages 10 through 12, which I thought embraced everything as a cover letter from the auditor.
So there's three separate reports we issue. So the first report covers the material correctness of the financial statements. So what that identifies is if the users of the financial statements can rely on the numbers that are included in here.
But wait a minute.
So we wait.
Aren't these part of the financial statements?
Yes.
Why would you have three different letters on an account?
Because that's how our auditing standards work, because we have three different levels of assurance and different levels of services we're providing. So So this, that first report is just really on the material correctness of the financial statements themselves. It does not have anything to do with internal controls. It does reference to the internal controls report, which is later. So it tells you, hey, we also issued an internal controls report. Look back.
Well, I don't know. I'm just looking at the draft. You know,
it's on that last paragraph.
And I don't see the word material at all in here, or deficiency at all.
Correct, because that audit report right there doesn't discuss internal controls. That just discusses the fact that the financial statements as presented.
But you can't tell if the financial statements accurately reflect if the internal controls you can't vouch for.
So we audited the numbers once the corrections had been made.
Okay.
So that report is really just to tell the users that the numbers are correct. That's what that first report is all about.
What makes me join you here a little bit on this is that there is, it's just an odd coincidence. A person dies, the number two retires suddenly.
Yes.
There you are, you're affirming that. So that's a red flag mm-hmm. in any organization. Mm-hmm. Meaning we need to put the pedal to the metal real quick on anything yeah. that could happen like that.
Yeah. I assume you would ask Dr. Iser for help with expedite getting people on board to help you catch up.
I discussed the issue with Andy Glass. Yeah.
Okay.
Andy's the director of operations and is her direct supervisor.
But I guess the question that we're asking is, did we get the appropriate stuff right away or did it take us some time?
No, we didn't.
Shortage.
I'm sure we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks.
Any other questions about that issue?
Okay.
I guess the bank reconciliation was finished then before the audit was completed?
Correct. We waited to audit cash until we had a reconciled bank.
And the outcome of that was this $26,000?
It was an entry that we made on our side, yes.
Entry was made on the bank.
Okay.
That's a large term, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a way to balance quick and dirty.
And that's the same situation with the medical accounts receivable. So it was not balanced. It was not ready for us to audit when we got here. So they were still working on that. And that's part of our finding as well, which I think that's our past adjustment.
So there was, there was some an issue. You might be able to speak to it slightly better, but there was a payment that got essentially sent to the wrong spot. And so you weren't balancing your receivables to what your third-party biller said should be your receivable.
Correct.
And then there is a slight lag time between when the insurers state how much of a charge is going to be allowable or not. And so we have a past adjustment, which is just because a small estimate had to be booked as to how much of the final receivable would be allowed. Mm-hmm. And so the difference between the estimate and what the final billing statements, third-party biller statements stated would be, there was a delta there. But the delta wasn't so significant that we would recommend a journal entry be posted.
And that number was?
$83,000.
It was $83,000.
So, and that's a timing difference because the third party payers don't instantly turn around and say that they're going to allow 100% of a charge or 70% of a charge, et cetera. So an estimate has to be booked for how much of the final receivable is going to be is actually truly an allowable receivable.
So on the 26,000, I know I'm just trying to think, gosh, who has an extra $100,000 laying around within a budget that you could have that kind of leeway?
But they're two different. I understand what you're saying. The $80,000 has to.
I'm thinking that's one employee, right? Or maybe one
it's one employee.
Yeah.
Close to.
Well, I think it's overstated.
Yeah, so the receivables and revenue are higher than they actually truly ended up being once the payments were settled out by the third-party payers and the billing.
So this next fiscal year, it'll wash out
through the next fiscal year. Yeah.
So it was higher than it should have been in the positive. Mm-hmm. The next time you'll take that right out, but I go back to that's one employee, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is that the difference that we'll have to make up to keep that employee, or we'll be able to hire that employee, I guess?
It would be the difference that would enable us to hire that employee.
Okay. I just, it's, when we've been short staff, right, the recession was hard, and so trying to ramp up, it's important that we have those numbers so that we can have the proper staff for your staff and other departments, so.
Is that all of 2017A?
Unless anybody else has anything else they would like to address?
So you've now explained 2017B and 20...
No, just A.
Just A.
Just A, okay, all right.
So 27...
I do, if I may ask a question. Sharon, why couldn't you have reassigned this assignment to other staff?
The staff didn't have the time because they were doing their day-to-day operations as well as doing the training. And so consequently, when they're out training for a week, they're doing training during the day. The overtime that they were using was to keep their daily job, like entering payables and receivables and those types of things. And so grant reporting, all of those things still needed to be done. And so it was one of those things. How could I ask them to go even further than what they were already doing? So I was trying to put the load on Janet and I, and it still wasn't happening.
Okay.
I mean,
but it just seems, though, at some point, right, somebody should have come to the board and said we need an emergency staff member, because what I'll tell you is, and this report is different than almost every other agency that we get, because they give you a full summary of what you're, and they put on the front page deficiencies, weaknesses, or whatever. So in the last paragraph, you know exactly what you should be looking for within the report as you're reading it. But it just seems that, and those words mean something when it comes to grants and it comes to bonds and all those other things. So it just seems that it's probably something that should have came to the board so we could have figured out how to expedite that for you. So I, at least from my perspective, I don't ever want any agency to be in this situation without coming to the board to right? That's what we're for, to try and help you do better, because this affects all of us. So just my personal opinion, Andy.
Well, no, that's okay. The request during the course of this was certainly recognition that it wasn't being done, but at the same time, the authorization of overtime, there were huge amounts of overtime being conducted by individual members of the staff, and it was particularly early. There was absolutely no constraint on overtime whatsoever, and that was the way that we felt that issues with any issues in finance were being handled was through the use of overtime. There was never a request for additional staff, and that was never a thing. What we were trying to do was to get the positions filled and authorizing overtime, in fact, during the course of the entire fiscal year, to address both the routine work as well as the implementation of the ERP.
Well, I mean, I don't want to argue it, but at least at the county, when we see a whole bunch of overtime, we start asking, is there a different way we can handle this? Because we might not even be able to make overtime. Sometimes eats up the budget in 60 days as opposed to had we went and hired a person. So that's all I'm asking is, it just seems that we should look in the future before we get into this situation to if there's other alternatives. And I get that everybody loves overtime, but you know, after a certain amount of overtime, you're not very good, right, at what you're doing because you're tired.
It's not productive.
So that's just my thing. I just feel like that's an opportunity for you all to come to the board and say, I get that we have a 26% any fund balance, but here's a situation because it affects who we are, right? We're having this meeting because we had to wait till we could balance everything later than we're accustomed to doing it. So it kind of puts everything on hold, and I appreciate that your staff was doing all these things, but you shouldn't have to have the weight of the world on your shoulders when we could have probably helped expedite it at some point for the future. That's my personal opinion.
No, I appreciate that. And Andy, it sounds like even with the additional overtime, it didn't fix the problem. The problem, they couldn't get caught up or whatever. So it sounds like even with additional overtime, you know, we were not solving the issue.
Correct.
with this, I'm sorry, but
go ahead.
I've got to ask for recognition. I was thinking, coughing here, I was thinking that we've run into these situations before. Marilyn and I did a lot of state budgets and read a lot of opinions when we were up there. And you really have a situation where frequently overtime just is necessary, just pencils out better that way, and you just live with it. And it's not an alarm, but it's something to watch. But in this particular case, in a small department, losing two people suddenly is a real concern. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, how your suspicions immediately rise. They should, anyway. That's something to consider. Mm-hmm. Particularly, it raises questions in my mind. I don't want to belabor it here today. Just like, was there an extraordinary amount of overtime with the two individuals, mm-hmm. one deceased and one had retired? I don't know. Did the person retire totally?
No, he resigned.
He resigned?
Right.
Was that Kiala?
The first person, Kiala resigned.
And when did he leave?
He resigned the day after Rick had a stroke.
Man stroked out and died?
The first man stroked out and died.
Yeah.
And Kiala resigned the day after he had a stroke.
Did she have a statement of departure? Was she briefed? Or, you know, was there something to indicate why she was leaving?
He wanted to pursue his, he had a real estate career on the side.
Oh.
And he wanted to pursue that.
Oh, they're allowed to have businesses on the side. Oh, okay.
I think I'm the only one who isn't.
Uh-huh. Okay. How long have you, thank you. Addressing Ike Bailey for a minute. Mm-hmm. How long have you been on the account?
This is our second year.
Just your second year. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'd sure like a copy of your opinions from the last year. Because are they in three forms? Three different, mm-hmm. as a prior account. Who was the prior agency, firm on the account?
Was it Piercy Bowler?
Piercy Bowler.
How long did they have it?
5 years.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
2017B?
Please.
Okay, so the next one deals with, this is where we identified material weakness and internal control over compliance as well as material non-compliance. And it has to do with Nevada revised statutes and budget requirements. And there were just several budget violations that we noted, and some were material to us, that we just felt that it rose to the level of a material weakness and material non-compliance. And if we look at the condition on page 101, so some of the things that happened, and I'm not sure, I know Marilyn is very intimately familiar with budgets. I'm mm-hmm. not sure if everybody else is. But, you know, you have your final budget, and that's your rule book for the year.
Right.
And that's how things should be spent. And so what we had identified is that the health district transferred $826,000 from the general fund to the capital projects fund. However, that $826,000 had never been included as a transfer from the original, from the final budget. It was not augmented. So in our mind, it was not allowed. And then in addition to that, there were two funds, the bond reserve capital projects fund and the internal services fund, both exceeded their available budget appropriations, one by $58,000 and one by almost $34,000. So, to us, it just seemed like there, you know, the policies and procedures in place over budget amendments as well as budget augmentations were not in place or were not sufficient to address these issues.
Are you ready for Sharon?
Okay. Tammy and I had a long discussion more than once about this, and I was not aware. I was aware of the fact of doing budget augmentations, because if you're going to exceed your budget, you have to do the augmentation. We did do a budget augmentation in May to cover the funds that were expended out of the building reserve fund. The augmentation we did wasn't large enough. That's part of the delta in the bond reserve fund of the $58,000, because there were additional expenses that I was unaware of that were going to happen. So I had thought I covered everything. I was unaware of the fact that if you transferred funds that you needed to amend your budget, because we didn't go over budget, which was some of the discussion I had with Tammy. I kept saying, mm-hmm. but I didn't exceed my general fund budget. I was within budget. I didn't go over budget. I didn't need to amend the budget. And so what she explained to me, and she brought me the NRS, which this has been a lesson, is that, well, even if you do that, because you did a transfer of the funds and moving it into a different fund, it still requires, if nothing else, notification to the board that you transferred those funds. And that's where I went. I was completely unaware of that. I did not know that, and so I did not do that. And I will, that's all I can say, is that I can't make an excuse or anything else, because there is no excuse for that. I was unaware of that. I did not exceed the general fund budget by even doing the transfer, but I was not aware that I needed to come forward with the transfer and make the board aware of that.
Doug?
How large is your staff?
How large is my staff? I have a staff of 22. Okay. And we encompass the warehouse. We do all the inventory, receiving and shipping. We do all the purchasing. We do all the contracts. We do all the travel requests. We do all the accounts payable, accounts receivable, payroll, billing, general ledger, budget.
How many more do you need?
How many more do I need?
Yeah, you feel you have sufficient staffing right now, so we don't end up here next year?
Do I feel like I have sufficient staff?
Because now's a good time to probably ask.
Well, now's the time to give us a heads up on what we need to be looking for within the budget, just as Ms. Harding did, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have enough, it would be a good time to say, even if you needed some part-timers. Because this, in my personal opinion, is never healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And staying here till 10:30 at night is not either.
Mm-mm. That's not.
Yeah, that's not sustainable.
Doug asked you a question.
I know.
It's not personal. We're just trying to figure out how to help you for the future.
Exactly. And I'm not, you know, trying to give you a bad time. I do this for a living. Financial controller for our company. And we're about a $20 million company. I know where you're coming from. But that's why I'm asking, do you have the people to get this job done?
No.
Because if you don't, it's our responsibility to make sure you do.
Yeah, so no.
Yeah.
I might say that yesterday, Sharon presented to me a proposed reorganization within the department that did not add staff.
Because you have told me that I cannot add staff.
Okay. But at the same time, you told me that with this reorganization, you felt that you could do the job that's necessary.
But I'm just going to say, from a personal perspective of the board, if you set that, and this is no different than the conversations I've been having with all the management and the employee meetings, if you set an expectation for someone, you don't have a choice but go try and live within that expectation. So, in all fairness, Andy, if you've said in the past and you haven't said, listen, there might be some wiggle room to get you a few more people, why don't you reorganize your stuff, and then why don't you tell me some other things you can do? I mean, it's no different. We do this all day long in other government, right? We don't have enough people. Maybe we got to raise this fee so that we can have that person for the long time. But when you set an expectation, our employees follow that expectation, right, wrong, or indifferent. And I'm not here to blame anybody, but it's a tough job, and I gotta tell you, I feel for you, because you're having to suck up a lot of things because no one came to the board and brought it to our attention, but at the same time, you own it, because that's your responsibility, right?
Correct.
So we as a board have to set an expectation. This can never happen again. What is it gonna take to make it right? So that's just, sorry, I mean, but
no,
when you set the expectation, that's what I would
discussion.
Do, is figure out how I can do it. So I would ask that, at the very least, when we have this discussion at the board, there'd be a different conversation of the reorganization plus the additional staff that would help make it easier, because I tell you, the worst thing that can happen to an organization is turnover within the accounting department.
Boy.
Sorry.
Mr. Cobb.
Thank God I'm not chairing.
I think it would be a good idea for the board to know, not today, but I suspect among the 24, including you two guys? 22 total, that some of them are not accountants.
Correct.
Some of them are doing things, and maybe there should be more cross-training within the department of people who can fill in when you have departures. You gotta figure that. That's a whole agency.
Yeah, but we're going into a budget crisis, and a budget cycle, and this is not a, for me personally, I'm uncomfortable going into a budget where we're a year and a half into where we should have been, right? So now we're gonna be, at the same time, we're going into a new medical health system, IT thing that we approved, right, to help do some of that. So you're gonna run into the exact same problem with people trying to do training, trying to do all these other things, and then trying to do a budget plus your day job.
Sometimes auditors have recommendations on temporary help, which can then come in.
We should ask them to give us one.
They're kind of nice because they're independent in a sense.
We are meeting afterwards to have that exact discussion.
Yeah, auditors are usually good at picking people out that are not gonna be your tool. At the same time, they're gonna kind of keep an eye inside, worms inside there, so to speak. Good people to have, though.
We have one more. Look, we're only on number two. We have one more.
Good.
Are you ready for C?
Not C. Okay. So.
Before we go there, though, it sounds like to me that what this committee wants to do is to consider a revision, a new staffing plan that is going to provide the necessary personnel to make sure that these sorts of things, not that they won't ever happen again, but let's decrease the possibility of those happening. So that's what we would like to see. Is that correct? Am I hearing
that's
that
from? That's where I'm coming from personally.
That's what we in management hear too.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, so those are the two that relate to the financial statements, internal controls over financial reporting. The third one is 2017-001, and we differentiate it because it relates to the federal programs versus the overall financial statements. And that, you have that up. Okay, and again, I had briefly discussed this relates to the Family Planning Services program. And it related to the program income compliance requirements. So there are 12 different compliance requirements that we have to look through. So it was only this one compliance requirement over program income that we identified. We did identify it as material noncompliance as well as a material weakness in internal controls. And do you want to go through what happened there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the program income requirement for this plan, it mandates that patients be charged for the services that they receive, but only in as much as they're able to demonstrate an ability to pay. And that ability to pay is to be measured against the federal poverty guidelines. And so the district here, we have a sliding fee scale that's applied. And based on where they fall within the districts, within the federal government's poverty guidelines, they are charged from 100% for the services received all the way to nothing at all if they are at 100% or below the poverty threshold. In our test work, we identified four encounters specifically where the amount of the support on hand in the file to verify the patient's proof of income did not agree with the income classification that they had in the system. One instance, a patient appeared to have been charged at a higher rate than the income support that they provided would indicate that they should have been charged. And then three instances where patients were not charged for services received. It appeared as though they were not charged for services received, even though they did. In these three instances, they elected to not provide proof of income at all. And if the patient elects to not provide proof of income, then they are presumed to be above the poverty threshold. And so they should theoretically be charged 100%. It's worth noting that during the year, the family planning group came in and did an overview of the program, and they recommended a process improvement, which has been put into place, which no longer, the clinics no longer allow patients to just omit any information. So now they are required to submit some information for their proof of income. But that will definitely help, but in our opinion, that doesn't sufficiently address the issue as a whole, which is that it appears that the review process that is in place either was not fully functional or wasn't functional at all in making sure that the information in the system agreed to the income levels within the clinic system.
And so that was 40 out of, we have a sample of 40. So 4% out of 40, so 10% of our population had errors in it with the program income.
And from what I hear, that would mean one was overcharged and three were undercharged.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Marilyn, did you have a question?
So I do. So the initial grant, though, I'm in the mentality sometimes if they come for family planning, we should service them regardless. So, because at the end of the day, it saves us on the long term. So did the grant specifically say that you couldn't service them?
Well,
it is a question, right? Because, well, I mean, if somebody doesn't have the information to tell you or they can't communicate one way or another, you still want to give them those services because that's our responsibility. So I'm asking if the grant prohibited us from offering that service if they didn't provide that information.
So it does not prohibit you from offering the service, but the wording of it says that you must charge. So you must attempt to receive payment if they either are above the poverty threshold or if they're not able to provide it. So they can't provide any information, it's presumed that they're above the poverty threshold. And so you can render service, but you have to at least attempt to charge for it.
And I might be mistaken, but is this grant the one that the first service is allowable, but they have to provide that proof of income, or am I just thinking of something else?
I'm not. That may be something different, because that's not.
But no. The wording, well, the grant doesn't word it that way.
Yeah.
Currently, what they do is they allow the customer to self-certify the first service. So in other words, I'm self-certifying that my income level is only at X. And then the second service, if they come in, they cannot self-certify. They have to bring proof of income. We're in the process, because this has come up, of adding some hardship clauses to our billing practices, so that way when customers do come in, and also
he's on the phone.
Oh, okay, sorry for me. And so we're also adding donations to where even if they pay $10, but what it would do is we have the forms, we've created the forms that we're going to use, and so they would check that off. So in this case, because it is a Title 10 program, they would go through the Title 10 program if they qualified that they're at 50% or whatever, but yet they still feel it's a hardship, or they would also fill out the hardship documentation, which would qualify them in the other area to where we have a policy that would allow us to back up and still service that client to where we wouldn't potentially get that type of write-up, because it fell out of the Title 10 into the next policy to help address your concerns, I believe, that you're having.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just don't want to turn somebody away, for lack of better terms. They don't have, if you ask me if I had $10 in my wallet today, I don't.
Right.
So, but I'm just saying, but I may still need that service. So it sounds like the hardship piece, and you're giving them a couple different ways to be able to get it without having to show or pay that dollar.
Correct. And that's been some of the challenges we've been confronted with the whole new billing process and billing cycle, and how do we address our clients, and because, you know, where grants used to fund, you know, so much of our clientele, well, how do we address it? And, you know, they're saying to charge the insurance. Well, we still have a lot of clients that are either uninsured or underinsured, so we've come up with these avenues. We work with Carson City and Washoe County now, and we talk to them about what are their practices and how are they moving. And so we're all in that newbie stage, so we're all creating these new policies and procedures so that we can cover ourselves, so that we're doing everything within the guidelines and we're staying contractually with the insurance companies, but also we're able to provide a service for free if the client can't pay.
And by free, it means that the grant, or this has a 10% match from our property tax funds. Right. And I think we may overmatch it. And so the grant wants to be the funder of last resort. And that's why more and more of these categorical grants, but in particular clinical categorical grants, are requiring us to do more and more billing. And it is one of those things, I know you know this, all of you know this, but public health has been used to giving everything away for free. And that's where you've heard me say over my whole 4 years that this is the trajectory of how things are going and how we have to get there somehow.
Correct.
Couple of questions. What type of information is necessary for them to verify their income up?
They can bring in a pay stub, a W-2, a tax form, anything like that. But the thing that, one of the things when I think it was the federal, and or was, I believe it was the federal, that we weren't verifying if they received child support, those types of things. So that's why I said even when they came in and did their site review, they made some recommendations, and we've made those types of changes where we're verifying that type of stuff, information also. But what we ask them to bring in is a copy of that type of information.
So when they come in and they present that type of information, a person makes a decision about what band they're going to be charged in or how much they're going to be charged. Is there somebody else then that then checks that? Is there a check and balance there?
The way that it's supposed to work is the person that they're meeting with, the administrative staff, and then the supervisor is supposed to have the final check.
And so it sounds like to me that there was a training deficiency, or maybe the training would help, but now you've had that additional training, or that?
Yes, we've had that additional training, but I think we're still getting better.
Okay.
I wouldn't say we're at 100%, but we're still getting better.
And I think it is that supervisory piece. So there wasn't that review process, that, you know, that control that's in place to make sure to verify the accuracy of what was
information
input by the staff.
So that was missing? Is that what you?
Yes.
It appears as such, yeah, okay. Because that sort of a level of review most likely would have caught these.
Can I ask one more question? So you said child support. I didn't think that you could ask. I didn't think they had to disclose if they get child support or alimony.
Well, see, we didn't think so either. And that's why I said when they came in with their site review, that was one of the things that they noticed was missing, is that we are supposed to ask that for Title 10.
Really?
Yeah. So
did that change?
Yeah. Federal stuff. And it's just like the guys back there trying to make certain that street people don't get free something.
I mean, there's got to be a few grants that do that, because anywhere else you're not allowed to. That people don't have to. I mean, I think you should disclose it, but you don't have to. Yeah.
This is one of the grants that most of our grants we get through the state, but this is one of our grants that we get directly from Title 10 out of the San Francisco Regional Office.
Yeah.
We get only a few like that. The Pitch Grant was one of those. This is one of those. Teen pregnancy prevention.
Right.
It's one of those.
Interesting. Learn something new every day.
Okay. Tammy?
Are the three items that we had addressed. So I think we've gone over what our opinions are related to each of those. And I think we did talk about the one pass adjustment, the 83,000, and I don't know if there was anything significantly relevant.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to accept the document with our recommendations to be forwarded to the board.
Do I have a second for that motion?
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The next item on the agenda is review and discuss and potential acceptance of the cost allocation study.
Sharon McCoy-Huber, Financial Services Manager. I'm going to turn this over to Janet Webster, the Accounting Supervisor. She's going to roughly go over it. So while we're doing the audit, we're also doing the cost allocation and working with our consultants on this plan. So, Janet.
Janet Webster, I'm the Accounting Supervisor. And bear with me, I'm not exactly used to going on over these things. I helped get the information together to give to them to prepare this cost allocation. And just to point out the bottom line, our cost allocation went from 33.69% down to 28.88%. The biggest difference in that is the year that this was prepared on, which is 2016. We were still had several rentals. And so, but it only went through 7 months of that. So the 5 months that we didn't have in is what made the biggest difference in our percentage.
So to me, this is good news. It means that the saving, among many other savings, by buying this building, this is one of those savings, is that the cost of us doing business has gone down because we're not paying out big amounts of rents. And Janet, you can correct me, but I think we have another several months of the subsequent year, which would have been last year.
This year, 16,
yes,
had 7 months of rent in it. 17 will have none.
Okay,
so it will go down again.
So it will go down even more next year. And it seems to me that this is also good because this cost allocation is high that we have had, and it makes us a little bit less competitive for some grants. And as the cost allocation goes down, that will make us more competitive, I believe, for other grants. Or we'll lose less on those grants than what we do now.
Okay.
Right, because currently the general fund more or less supports the delta in the cost of operations for the grants, because the majority of the grants only reimburse at a cost allocation of 10%. And so, so the general fund more or less supports the difference.
Okay. Is there any discussion, question, comments?
Pleased to see the directions.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask, sorry, Mr. Nielsen. So if you compare some of these to 2015, there's like a few that still continue to increase, and there's a few that went down significantly to offset so that you could have that 4% difference.
Mm-hmm.
So why would some of those still be increasing at a large level if you're saying that we have some savings from the leasing of the buildings? So like, let me give you an example. Community Health Services, in 2015, the overhead multiplier was 127.73, then it went down to 112.77.
Right.
But at the same time, you have Environmental Health, which was 31.94%, it increased to 96.39%. So I'm wondering how do we determine how that multiplier is growing exponentially in some cases and dropping way low in the other, if the predominant reason that we're seeing a savings is because of leasing.
Okay. Well,
I'm asking, I don't know, I'm not an accountant, but I mean the numbers look
there was a major reorg in the environmental health, because the environmental health and several other things were all lumped together, and in this year's we split them apart. And so I think that that's probably where you see some of the differences from the previous year.
So if you took environmental health, just as an example, so overall, everything increased with the exception of the, including the safe drinking. So everything increased except for solid waste went down a few points and underground storage. So if you, even if you reorganize that, that department as a whole seen a fairly large increase across the board. If you're reorganizing, I guess I'm just trying to understand because in layman's terms, right, you want to know how what that cost allocation is. And I know you can charge for administration. I know you can charge for legal. I know you can charge for all these things which are set in statute on what you can charge. So I'm just, I guess I'm just trying to understand if I were looking at it this time next year, where would I see those multipliers decreasing for me?
And probably the piece to me that's missing is the total departmental expenditure. So if we would have had that one more column that showed the total departmental expenditures for 2015, I think that would have helped explain it. And without us going back and looking at that, I know I can't give you that answer without right. that column.
Okay.
And so,
yeah, I'm not trying to make more work, but no. I'm just seeing that it.
No, I completely agree. I think it'd be very helpful to be able to look at 2015 for the total departmental expenditures, and then you would be able to see what's increased, what's decreased, and the relationship as opposed to these percentages.
I just think that when the public looks at it, that we, in environmental health, is toxic. Because of fees all the time, not because of the department, but because of the fees and all of that. So, I mean, if I were a layman, well, I am a layman's person, just looking at it, and I'm not an accountant, I'm thinking, how'd that go down? None of that went down, it went way up. So.
But that's the type, that, without looking at that, but we can look at that and we can get you an answer on that.
Can you provide us a revised version of this with that additional column?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Got a lot of overtime and stress in you later.
And would any of this have to do with leasing at Rancho or leasing with some of our outbuildings? Because we do have environmental health all over the, well, not just the valley, but all over the county.
Well,
I'm just asking.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could take any one of them, right, and see that. I mean, why is it that AIDS, TB, HIV went up 40%, but yet the sexual health clinic went down. So, right, I just think, I guess I'm looking for a little more detail of how that cost allocation, how that multiplier is decided.
So if you look, I'm taking up on the same idea, look at the food handler education and administration. Mm-hmm. Looks like there was a big percentage change there. Mm-hmm. Is that... And from the board standpoint, is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, do we want that to go down that much? I mean, that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out.
Okay. I know the same methodology was applied in both fiscal years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the methodology didn't change.
Right.
So feasibly, the only thing that would have caused those types of deltas would have been the cost.
Yeah.
And without looking with those total dollars, I can't mm-hmm. answer that. Mm.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on the allocation? Okay. Move on.
And it's to accept the cost allocation study as the action item.
That's right. We'll need a motion for that.
To accept the cost allocation study.
I actually personally wouldn't want to accept it until we get those other changes. That would be my motion.
Is there a subsequent way for us to?
If we don't accept it, or at least to move it forward with no recommendation?
Well, usually this doesn't go on to the board. We just bring it to the finance committee because it's just a percentage of what we charge all the programs for administrative costs, more or less. The grants, like I said, the majority of our grants are only at the de minimis amount of 10%. Is there a downside? No, it's just we don't have a finance committee meeting again, usually until late February, early March to discuss the budget. But I would ask that we go ahead and operate with the lower multiplier.
That's the acceptance, is so that we can utilize the information in this.
Right.
then how if I I'll amend it. We accept this, the caveat you provide us the additional information.
At the December 14th meeting?
Prior to that.
Or before.
I doubt she can get it done that easy.
Can you do that?
She doesn't have enough.
And no 10 o'clock nights to get it to me.
Yeah.
I'm just saying before the February meeting so we can review it on the February agenda. It makes more sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a second?
Just so I'm clear, the motion is to accept the cost allocation study as it is now with the direction to ensure that by the February meeting this is updated relative to the costs and the multiplier.
Expenditures.
And expenditures.
Total departmental expenditures for 2015 is what I'm looking for.
So it's a style change.
Yeah.
Is that what your motion was, Mr. Devine?
I accept that motion.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
And there's a second to that motion. Is there any just
make sure it was clear?
Any further discussion of the motion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Next is discussion and approve the recommendations to the Southern Nevada District Board of Health special meeting on December 14th, 2017.
Did we already do that?
Yeah.
Do we need to do anything else?
Well, I think that, well, let's, maybe we can work together to define what your recommendations would be. One is that management come back to you all with an update. We won't be able to do it by the 14th, with an update related to staffing in the financial program. And the other recommendation, although this probably doesn't have to be in here, is on the cost allocation study.
Yes.
Because it does have to be in there, because it's already done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what I heard as the primary recommendations that you want to take to the board, and to accept the audit, I recommend acceptance of the audit to the full Board of Health.
Well, I do think that you should probably give some good news at the board that the cost allocation came in under. We're moving in the right direction.
Sure, we'll do that. We'll do that.
That's right, we're trying to tell our positive story.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So does that seem to be?
Three recommendations.
Okay. Good news.
Finance staff update.
No, I like bad news, but sometimes we got to hear the good stuff.
And the cost allocation came in under.
Right.
And I think that first recommendation is that we will come up with, but not have it by the 14th.
But not by the 14th.
Yeah. Is that correct? Okay. So I think do we need a motion on that?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
I was just curious why we need a motion, because we put it in our original motions as we adopted those things. But just protocol?
The motion language was with our recommendation.
To accept.
It was not delineated.
Yeah, the original motion was to accept the report. So this is now your motion to recommend to the board.
The specificity was not in the original motion.
Yeah,
I'm good. You're good first, second.
No, go right ahead.
All right, I'll take that as a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on that motion, such as it is? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
And if I may, we will have all of this to you, because you'll be giving this report.
So you have
at the
to
board
show
of
up.
I will be here. All right,
so
I guess.
What will happen next time.
The next item then is Mr. Coffin. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're going to go to public comment?
Yes.
Well, I have a question just before we go there. I wanted to know what part of a meeting here do we have delineated for member comments? Do you just squeak it in? How do you do it?
It's interesting, because we do have member comments on the board meetings.
Well, they happen.
We don't usually at subcommittee meetings, but
this whole thing's been in member comment.
There's a lot of member comments on point on an agenda item. Now the agenda's done, passed, and so I just was curious. The reason I say that is because I'm just curious how we stand amongst other governmental agencies here without having an internal auditor, which would report directly to the board. We have in the city, and we have in the county. I'm just curious the threshold, that is a recommended threshold, let's say. I don't know what it is, but we have, what, 500 employees?
A little bit less.
A little bit means you could round up.
I think we're 480s.
We have budgeted 525. We currently have approximately 489
positions filled. Okay, so let's say 500. I don't know what the recommended threshold is for having a very small unit. that can dig in just one or two budgets at a time, sub-budgets and so on. And it's a great aid for management. They know that they're being watched by someone in the building, and that person reports. That way you don't have to invite the CPAs from outside involved. You do it here, and that way the board then hears. Doesn't make anything worse for the agency. It does help the agency to have inside people who really know what they're doing.
And may I ask, this would be in lieu of an outside auditor?
No.
Okay, that's
no. And I'm just saying, let's think. And maybe it's stupid, but I don't know.
I've never been in a health department when that happens.
County must have more than that. But
a few.
You get the idea. I don't know what threshold is.
But I would almost look at that. We're what, $60 million operation?
70.
Are we 70 now?
Yes.
70. The county is what?
Many.
Now.
Billions.
Exactly. I'm not sure for a $70 million operation, we can justify the cost to have a staff of internal auditors and an outside auditor firm. In public health, I'd rather see that money for the internal go to public health issues and count on our financial team to, you know, keep things going. I mean, that's how I would look at it, the private sector.
And getting back to your point, though, I think it'd be interesting to look at other agencies of similar size, similar budget, whatever, to see, is there a threshold where it does make sense?
We can do that.
Yeah.
We can do that.
I'd like that to come back to the February
finance committee. It's really a junior auditor, right? Internal auditor, so that you don't have to, because you have to think about the cost.
Sure.
It's a senior position, maybe with one or two staff, but you have, they are very independent.
But I mean, we have vacancies today that we got to get filled.
Maybe.
I
only pose that because I noticed something here today that means that typically your internal auditor would then come to management and say, look, here are the things that are going to give you a bunch of dings on the annual audit.
That was Sharon's job, is Sharon's job. Mm-hmm.
Well, she's not reporting directly to the board, she reports to you.
No, but it is Sharon's job. And it's Sharon's job to report to the board. She reports to you,
but she's not
fairly frequently.
Not what I mean. There's job security involved in these kinds of things. We want honest answers from the people that do this.
Well, that's
and I mean, not, an insult. No pressure answers.
Yeah. No, look, I'm just joking.
It's not.
Why don't we look at other organizations of this size here in Nevada and surrounding states to give you an idea?
It's worth a look.
If you can provide us with some information on sort of how big you have to be to afford that.
There may be, for example, vector control districts in surrounding states that are about our size, or air quality districts that are about our size, and we can. Those are independent agencies that are usually multi-county, and we can look at some of that.
Okay. The only reason I say this is we do not know really how much money went wrong or went sideways in the discussion that ended up with a journal entry.
I think we do. I hope we do
to the best of our abilities.
Well, now that you've had your audit done.
Yeah, that's why the auditor. Like,
But for a period of time, there was a period of time when
where we were
could
very
been,
much at risk.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to turn this into a personnel session. I'm happy to
leave now. Mr. Chair, do you want to modify the prior motion and include this as a recommendation? Or just leave it as a direction to the staff?
I'd like to just leave it as a direction to the staff.
Yeah, we would come back then for the next, not audit committee, but the next finance committee in February, March.
March, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be great. All right. With that being said, I'd now open the meeting up to public comment.
Start us and finish us.
I will.
Recognize Ms. Harding.
This is the recorder right here.
Do you want to share?
No, I'm fine, standard.
Okay. So, Victoria Harding, SNHD and SEIU. I just made a couple of notes as you guys were talking. The overtime, and I have to tell you, in the administrative report that you guys get at the Board of Health meeting, it has the overtime of all those employees, because I actually look at it every month. And for the last year, I've been looking at it, I was like, oh my God, administration is crazy. But what it doesn't show you in there is, I know who those employees are, I know where they work. Had you been able to see that how many of those were finance, you would have seen that these people were working literally over the amount of another person. And I can tell you, I don't think they wanted to do that. They were doing that because they had to do it. And when Janet in January went up to being supervisor, she was no longer getting overtime, and she was almost working a double shift before that happened. You know, and but here's the thing. You know, attrition happens, and it happens for all kinds of reasons. There's attrition happening, and it's been horrible for the last couple of years. We have to deal with that. It's been happening not just in finance. We just saw what happens in finance when our attrition happens and how critical that is. In my area, I'm now, they've moved me over now into epidemiology. I am literally one of two disease investigators working in epidemiology right now. There used to be eight. I come in and I fail every day. Every day, public health isn't being taken care of. It can take me a month to get to somebody. And in that time, who knows what happened to that person? It is, the staffing levels are so low here that it's not about just one position here or another position over there. It's about a culture that we have been surviving rather than thriving, and that we can do more with less. And it's almost really a culture thing that we have to kind of get away from those thoughts of trying to figure out the money. How do we pay for this? Because I can't say, hey, let's bankrupt ourselves and hire everybody. You can't. But there has to be a change in thinking about what it is that we need and how to get there. Because your employees are leaving, and they're leaving at really alarming numbers because they're just burnt out. The other thing on the refusal of services for inability to pay, since I started the district, we were never allowed to refuse somebody for inability to pay. That has never happened. The whole idea of having a hardship policy to me is strange because we've always had that. We've never had to put something in writing. That was our directive. We were never to turn somebody away for lack of pay. And you know, and just when you start talking about this billing, the APRNs and the things that we're gonna do for the FQHC, you know, right now, if an APRN and we're billing doesn't show up in a clinic, we still see those people who come in, even though we couldn't bill them. An RN saw them and we can't bill them because we can't refuse services to people. And I think we really just need to figure out that balance, because we know we have to bill. It was really good when I saw that the fees for services are going through the roof. I think that's awesome compared to last year and everything. But we have to remember our public health, because every time we turn somebody away and they've got chlamydia or gonorrhea or something else, and suddenly their symptoms disappear, because that just tends to happen if you keep it too long, doesn't mean they don't have it. They're passing it off, and that's public health going astray because we didn't take care of it, because they couldn't get in for 3 weeks with their own primary doctor. We have to really balance these issues with public health and finances. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Not seeing anyone else, I'll close the public meeting, and I think we're adjourned.
Good job.
Thank you. You got a practice run.
That's a good thing.
I'm sorry I was late again.